Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 118, recorded Sunday, November 8th, 2015. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: danger inside the travel bubble, and switching back to Apple. So I'm coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, less than a month since the last episode. Now, there is a shocker, given my recent history of being a bit laggard. It's been one of my lighter travel months. No international travel, no up and backs across the U.S. Indeed, there are a couple of weeks where I didn't even pack a bag. I just did a day trip to Detroit or to Atlanta. You know, there's something liberating about that, just carrying a briefcase or a backpack. I guess, you know, it would have been the ideal situation to check out Spirit Airlines, but, I just don't hate myself that much. I mean, there's no rush to get to the gate for the start of boarding. You sort of stroll up, sit down, and then stay seated while the agent works through the cadence of status boarding groups. You know, really important customers, kind of important customers, fake important customers, and, you know, just everyone else. No rollerboard meant sort of no need for that boarding scrum. I just waited for the last call and walked on board. You know, it kind of reminded me of the days when I first started flying back, you know, some 30 years ago, when rather than racing to be the first on the plane, we'd see who could be the last, how late you could show up and then still get on the plane. My boss won when he talked his way past an agent, got onto the jet bridge, and then knocked on the plane door, because it had already been closed, which the crew then opened and let him on. I don't think I'll push it quite that far when I don't have a bag. A few of this month's trips have been in and out of Boston Logan Airport, and I'll tell you what, for as much stick as I give United, broken planes, late flights, just lousy service, I have to give them credit for their gate area at Logan. I don't know when they redeveloped it and when they opened it, but I'll tell you, it's really nice. Parts of it look like, I don't know, some sort of a, you know, hip hotel lounge with sort of cool hanging lights and non-bench seating. There's a stand-up, kind of high-top counter space for laptops with lots of plugs and lots of USB power slots. And there's even self-serve boarding gates with sort of modern subway-style turnstiles that you scan your boarding pass before letting you in. And those worked really well. It's probably one of the nicest gate areas I've been in a long time. So, you know what? Nice job, United. So following up, I got a good bit of commentary on the last episode, so thanks everyone. Thank you guys all very much. Rob Cheshire posted this comment on the website around the rant that I did in the last episode about BA being overzealous around carry-on luggage gate sizers. Rob said, "In defense of BA, you've stepped into the middle of their new hand baggage policy rollout, which was designed to rein in the amount of cabin baggage, which had really gotten out of hand. They're being strict across the board on elite members as well as everyone else, and it's definitely having a positive impact on bin space, as well as minimizing the amount of messing around, checking the last few wheelie bags that can't be stowed, that the cabin crew have to take care of in the minutes prior to pushback." Rob, thanks for that. Thanks for that point of view. Really appreciate it. I'll tell you, the one thing that I did like about the BA experience, about, you know, BA's luggage approach last month when I was flying from Edinburgh to London with my wife, was tagging the second bag that was meant to go under the seat, in my case, a backpack, they tagged it with a bright yellow tag, you know, to keep people from putting two bags overhead. I'll tell you, I don't think there's much that's ruder in plane travel nowadays than early boarders, status flyers, kind of maximizing their leg space by putting two bags overhead, really at the expense of the rest of the plane. Tagging that second bag certainly makes it easier for flight attendants or even, you know, later boarders to call out bin hogging. I loved it, and I would love to see that bit of their luggage policy move across the Atlantic. Andrew Gill left a comment on the Travel Commons Facebook page, building on my thoughts about using the new Revolut debit card during my September trip to Scotland. Andrew said, "The piece on Revolut was interesting. I've just spent the past 6 months living and working in the Philippines. I was lucky to be involved in the pilot of Supercard from TravelX UK." And Andrew gives the URL. It's a physical card complete with chip and PIN that can be used in retail stores and for online purchases also. The card is free, and the transactions are processed at the Visa Europe exchange rate with no foreign exchange fees or commissions added on. But the killer feature is it's linked to an existing debit or credit card, so there's no need to preload money onto the card. Transactions are processed in my home currency, so again, there's no FX fees or commissions added on. The pilot program has closed now, so fingers crossed it'll come out. It comes out of the pilot and into general release. So, Andrew, thanks for that pointer. I agree that being able to link the TravelX Supercard back to a debit or credit card is very useful versus the Revolut model, which is more like a prepaid debit card. Now, looking at the Supercard website, I mean, it looks like the pilot was only for UK cardholders. Hopefully hopefully they'll be able to expand their geographic footprint when they fully launch the card. You know, I'll tell you, it's interesting that Revolut is also a UK-based company. Seems like London is a hotspot for these fintech companies. Last week, I was talking to a guy who moved from London to Chicago to start up the U.S. operations for a different London-based fintech company, more based on lending than payments. He said actually that HSBC, so the big global bank, looked hard at buying Revolut because they were doing something that HSBC couldn't, even given HSBC's global reach and scale. I'll tell you, between Revolut and Supercard and big banks like Chase dropping their foreign exchange fees on their credit cards, the money hassles of international travel keep going down. I'll tell you, it's a far cry from having to cash an American Express traveler's check at the airport exchange desk just so you could get a cab to your hotel. Now, in an earlier episode, I talked about evaluation criteria for my TripAdvisor reviews. And the criteria went like this. I looked at bathroom, the room size, the workout room, the location of the hotel, and the service quality. Now, I decided during one of my trips last month that I'm adding a new criterion, accessible bedside electrical outlets. You know, most frequent travelers I know use their phone or tablet as an alarm, just, you know, kind of eliminating the need to psychically discern the operating instructions for each hotel's unique brand of clock radio. You know, most hotels have figured this out and provide outlets on their bedstand and, you know, in the wall, along the side of the bedstand, on the lamp base. But last month, I hit one of those knuckle-dragger hotels, a hotel in Vegas. I practically had to disassemble one of the two beds in the room to find an outlet that was hidden behind it. I mean, luckily, I carry long power cords. And hey, if you have anything, any thoughts, question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. You can always send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or you can always go old school and post them on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is danger popping the travel bubble. You know, in the last episode, I talked about attending the Papal Mass at Catholic University in Northeast D.C., which I'll tell you has never been one of the nicer sections of D.C. I had taken the Metro, D.C.'s subway, from the airport and would be getting back on it to catch my evening flight to Detroit. The Brooklyn stop at Catholic isn't a big stop, and I figured it would get overwhelmed at the end of the Mass by the 25,000 people there. I started thinking of alternatives. Getting a cab or Uber was just going to be probably as tough given the security restrictions. So my best alternative probably would have been to walk down to the next stop south on the Red Line, which is Rhode Island Avenue. And I'll tell you, from my days in D.C. going to college at Catholic, I remember that neighborhood being a particularly rough one. That was not going to be a pleasant walk. So I decided to skip communion and leave the Pope early to beat the crowds at the Brooklyn stop. You know, most of the times when we talk about travel security, we talk about airport security or digital security, but not often about physical security. Yet very often, travel drops us in unfamiliar settings, usually by our own choice, where we could unknowingly wander into very unsafe situations. I tell you, I did exactly that some years ago when visiting Cape Town, South Africa. I was shopping through some craft stalls that were set up in a park and just kept wandering along. Looking around at the buildings, looking up, looking around. Oh, and of course, I had my big Nikon SLR strung across my shoulder. I'm not sure I could have looked any more like a tourist if I had been wearing a big Don't Mess With Texas t-shirt and a Dallas Cowboys baseball cap. I mean, you know, at some point, though, I finally regained, you know, some situational awareness. And from my university years living in Northeast D.C. and then on the south side of Chicago, I realized that I was not in the best neighborhood right then. So I move over into the middle of the street so I don't get jumped from a doorway, and I walk with purpose now back the way I came. I did a little better this spring in New Orleans. I was standing on St. Charles Street in the Garden District watching a Mardi Gras parade. And I don't know, after a while, I got a bad feeling about the atmosphere around me. Nothing that I could put my finger on, but enough to make me give up a prime spot on the parade, on the parade route and walk up the street a bit. In the next morning's paper, I read there had been a gunfight at that spot about 30 minutes after I'd left, and a couple of guys ended up in the hospital. Now, you know, there have been other times in, say, Johannesburg, Bangalore, Guadalajara, that I had some of those same uncomfortable situations. But considering how much I travel, they're really rare events. I've wandered all around through Madrid, Beijing, Tokyo, Edinburgh, Saigon, London, and never felt unsafe. But those rare events do get your attention. But then again, that's outside the travel bubble. We've talked about that in past episodes, how travelers can often seem to sort of float above the places they visit unless they make the effort to sort of pop the travel bubble and engage. However, when those outside problems penetrate the bubble, that's more disturbing. Like the time, you know, some years back when I was visiting Rio, I mean, and this was years before the World Cup, I was checking in with a colleague who'd done a lot of business there in Rio, and he saw my room was on the second floor. He's like, no, that will not do. We went back to the hotel desk. He said, you need to get on at least a double-digit floor, at least 10, if not higher. Okay, why? I asked. Because, he explained, when the smash-and-grab gangs break in, really they start on the first floor and sort of work their way up floor by floor, room by room, until their bags are full. So, you know, the higher you are, the more likely they'll fill up before they get to you. I got to say that, you know, his logic, while disturbing, was sort of brutally impeccable. And this was from a guy still sporting a couple of bruises from an earlier mugging on Copacabana Beach. Or there was that few years ago when another colleague had to take a taxi to connect between Delhi's domestic and international terminals. This was before the latest renovations. He'd forgotten to print out his international itinerary, so they wouldn't let him on the transfer bus. And I've talked about in prior episodes, like, the crucial need to have a printed flight itinerary in India. And he couldn't find anyone in the domestic terminal to print one out for him, so he walked out to the cab rank and piles his bags into and on top of the taxi, and off he goes. to some out-of-the-way place underneath a highway overpass where the cab driver and a friend who suddenly appears shake him down for most of his money and his watch. They do leave him with his luggage and enough money for a cab fare to the international terminal. A polite mugging, no bruises with this one. The most disturbing bubble burst that I know happened, though, in the U.S., in a Westin in Connecticut. A friend checked in, and since the hotel was oversold, he was given one of those rooms that's, kind of a conference room with a bathroom, and they rolled out the tables and rolled in a bed for him. The next morning, as he was getting dressed, he finds he's missing his watch, his wedding ring, and the money and credit cards from his wallet, all of which were next to him on the nightstand when he went to bed. So as he's sort of looking around and piecing this together, he can figure out that someone had broken into the room. He saw that the conference room's double doors had, sort of enough of a gap that you could open the lock by slipping a credit card or a room key through the gap. And that person had stood next to him while going through his stuff on the nightstand. I mean, he's really lucky he's a sound sleeper. And I consider myself lucky. I don't lock myself away in the hotel. I make an effort to step outside the travel bubble to engage. And after 30 years of heavy travel, other than having my camera and a passport stolen, I'm really no worse for the wear. Certainly no bruises to show for it. And quite honestly, I'm not sure that I'd do it any other way, though I do pay more attention to hotel door construction than I used to. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is switching back to Apple. After your government ID, your smartphone is probably the most important thing you travel with. And while I quickly whip out my ID a few times a trip to prove my identity to the TSA, to hotel clerks, to car rental checkout folks, I use my smartphone constantly, maybe too constantly. I mean, and be that as it may, that the smartphone is the critical tool for today's frequent traveler. More and more airlines, hotels, car rental companies, travel agencies are pushing information that the traveler needs. They're pushing it to those smartphones. We've talked about that in prior episodes. You think about it. I mean, it is a tool. I mean, a carpenter has his framing hammer. The auto mechanic his snap-on wrench. But for the road warrior, it's the smartphone. And so it wasn't without a good bit of thought that I bit the bullet a few weeks ago and switched back to Apple, dumping my HTC One for a new iPhone 6S. I got to tell you, I wasn't thrilled to do it. I put it off for at least a month. And in the end, it was more out of frustration with the hardware, with the sort of slouching toward bankruptcy mess that HTC has become, than it was excitement about buying the latest iThing. Which I guess is the pattern for me. My first smartphone was an iPhone 3G, and I'd had just about every iPhone model up to the 5. And it was the frustration with its truly horrid battery life that led me to defect and go buy the HTC. And the cause this time was the lousy performance of the HTC One. Right after they pushed their Android upgrade, Lollipop or version 5, at the beginning of the year, it just trashed the phone. The lag was awful. Now, the hardware components have the specs to handle the new version. It's just that HTC's implementation of it is just complete crap. I don't know any other word for it. Now, it's not like Apple nails their OS upgrades every time either. I mean, their iOS 8 release didn't exactly cover them in glory. But at least they worked to resolve the problem by iterating through the releases in a fairly timely manner. I mean, after the initial Lollipop release, Google iterated through updates. I don't know. I think version 5.1.1 is the most recent release until they just released version 6. What is it? Marshmallow now. They released that a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, they had iterated through, and I'd waited for HTC to use that as an opportunity to clean up their 5.0 mess. You know, they would say on Twitter, it's coming, just wait. And then it's like, we'll just skip 5.1 and give you 6.0 by the end of the year. I mean, that was it. I had suffered through 6 months of lousy performance, and now they were saying I would have at least 3 more months of lousy performance. Not that I had any reason to think that this near-bankrupt company had gotten any better at software estimating. Now, I don't necessarily think either Apple's or Google's operating system are inherently better, you know, that one's inherently better than the other. I mean, I've used them both. And again, they're tools. You know, they both work. There are things I like about each of them. And since they seem to be stealing, emulating, you know, each other's best features, I don't know, it feels like they're more or less converging on each other. For me, though, the difference is the hardware, which is what is in our hands each day. It's the physical manifestation of the software. It is the tool itself. I've always actually thought that Apple is a better hardware company than a software company. I loved my MacBook Air, but I was very sort of meh about OS X. And here, it's really the Android equipment manufacturers that are pushing me away. It seems that most of the Android hardware innovation is at the large end, you know, sort of large screen sizes, 5.5 inches and above, which is way bigger than what I want. You know, the HTC One or the iPhone 6S at, you know, at like around 5 inches, that's a nice size screen. I don't want to get it any bigger. And then there are delays in Android upgrades as each manufacturer gooses sort of Google's release. My 18-month-old Samsung tablet is still on version 4.4, the KitKat version, now 2 version levels down, but with no update in sight, let alone any security patches. And with, you know, with mobile devices, smartphones, tablets, again, these tools becoming more and more vital, that foot dragging on upgrades and certainly security patching makes me very uncomfortable. Now, I was holding out, actually, for Google's updated Nexus line, reading all the, you know, rumor articles with specification leaks and, you know, blurred pictures. The 6P, the Nexus 6P, was just going to be too big for me. Again, a 6-inch screen, really, come on. But the Nexus 5X, you know, I could do a 5.2-inch screen with fast updates and patches. But then, when they unveiled the 5X, it topped out at 32 gigabytes with, you know, no expansion slots. And for me, that's just too tight for my music, podcasts, pictures, videos. So that was it. I walked into the Apple store, bought the 64 gig unlocked GSM 6S on their new upgrade plan. So you know what? New phone comes out, new iPhone comes out, I just trade mine in. You know, it's kind of like leasing a car. You know, some people like the newest model, and I guess that's me. It's like I said, it's all about the hardware. Now, if I can just keep iTunes from crashing on my Windows 10 box, it'll all be a good thing. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 118. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. You can find the Travel Commons podcast on iTunes. Hopefully yours doesn't crash. SoundCloud, Stitcher. I'm actually going to play around and try and push it up to Google. I guess Google Play or Google Music, whatever Google's doing, they've now got podcasts, so I'm going to try and push it up there. Anyhow, if you've got a story, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, to M. Peacock on Twitter, or write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on Facebook or the website. And until we talk again, travel safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.